Back at it, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, May 19th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. Governor Ned Lamont's signature on a bill earlier in the day legalizing no-excuse absentee ballots in all future state elections was our lead topic on the program. I offered my thoughts and shared some phone calls and text messages on that. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by to chat about the contentious battle for the U.S. House in Connecticut's 1st Congressional District and how organized labor is reacting. Finally, author and Substack.com blogger Mark Tapson talked about rising immigration and cultural tensions in Great Britain.
So why do I still feel kind of queasy about this? Why do I still feel squishy about this? Even though the powers that be in Hartford are telling me, Paul, don't worry about it. There's nothing here to worry about. What we refer to is this. Now, Connecticut is joining a growing number of states, probably about half of the country right now, give or take a few. I'm seeing different numbers here. About half the states in the U.S. That apparently don't have the Bridgeport stuff going on in it that we do. And maybe that's why. But about half of the states in the U.S. now are offering what has now become law, thanks to a signature today by Governor Ned Lamont, no-excuse absentee balloting. Now, you know, previous to that referendum or that ballot issue question that was put on in November of 2024, the last White House election cycle, previous to that, Connecticut had six, maybe seven different things that you could use, or conditions or circumstances that you would have to state one of them for wanting an absentee ballot. You would be on military service. You would be out of the country. It is a religious holiday. You are infirmed permanently. You are infirmed temporarily. What was one of the other ones? You're working at a polling place that is not yours. Then they added one or two post-COVID, like, you know, you have a fear of getting sick, whatever. But at least up until today, if you wanted an absentee ballot, you had to say, this is the reason I'm requesting my absentee ballot. I think the only time, as I mentioned this earlier, the only time I ever did it was for the 1980 election, Jimmy Carter v. Ronald Reagan. I believe I used a ballot when I was at BU for that one. So, yeah, I would have, because I was 19 and I was eligible to vote, and I was very excited to do it. But since then, I've never used an absentee ballot. Now, understand something. In principle, I have nothing against absentee ballots. I don't. But there's two things here that make me a little squishy poo about this. You know what I'm saying? There are two things here that I go, okay, I guess. Number one is Bridgeport. And I'm sorry to have to say that. I really am. But we are still ferreting out. We're still peeling back the onion layers on the stuff that went on in 2019 and the stuff that went on in 2023. And who knows? There may be stuff, quote unquote, that goes on next year in the next mayoral election cycle in Bridgeport in 2027. I hope not. I cross my pudgy Italian fingers and toes that none of that happens. But having said that, I think you can understand why there are some people here in Connecticut who say, all right, you're going to loosen up the absentee ballot requirements or the absentee ballot regulations, and still we are ferreting out these charges in Bridgeport. All right. So that is number one. Number two is, if you remember the way this ballot measure was worded, it never said anything about mail-in voting. It only said, and I got to find the wording of this, it only said, hey, what about the fact that, how about we do this change that all the you could have an absentee ballot if you want one. It never actually mentioned, I believe, the words mail-in voting, which is what this is. And part of me that's probably equally as squishy or maybe a little more than I am about the Bridgeport thing is that this was kind of done, I don't want to say underhandedly, because it did pass by a large margin, but do you think this would have passed if
the ballot measure that a lot of people voted yes on in November of 2024 had actually used the words mail-in voting. Now, I know what you're saying. You're probably saying, well, Paul, how the hell else does an absentee ballot get to where it's going? Well, you can mail it. You can drop it off. And there are a couple of good things in this bill. Number one, they elevated futzing around with a drop box to a Class D felony, which is good. That should be felonious behavior and not just a misdemeanor. Oh, I'm sorry. Give me a Bridgeport wrist slap, honey. Yes. So that's good. And the Republicans were able to get a major part of this changed to basically say the distribution list for absentee ballot applications cannot be permanent. In other words, I believe the way the law is going to be rolled out here is that you have to ask or get that application every year. But we start with this, and maybe I'm being, as the great, not-so-great Spiro Agnew used to say, what was that phrase he used? A nattering nabob of negativity, or something like that. Chris likes that. He's smiled at that. Chris, am I a nattering nabob of negativity? Come on, me? But what? See, he agreed with me. Thank you so much. Now your check will clear for the week. No, but seriously. How do you feel about this? Let's start with this. And is this PTSD because of Bridgeport? Is it? Maybe I should relax. Maybe I should pop one of the Valium I have at home. It's for an inner ear thing, but no, you know. Maybe I should pop one of Mother's Little Helpers, or as Mick used to say, one of Mother's Little Helpers. She goes running forward his shell. You can see it's going to be one of these days. So what do you think? 203-333-9422. Do you approve of Governor Ned Lamont signing a bill allowing the use of no-excuse absentee ballots in Connecticut elections? Are you okay with that? And the supporters are going to say, come on, Paul, look at all the states that do this. To which I say, come on, Mr. or Mrs. Supporter. Do any of these people in any states ever experience Bridgeport? All righty, righty, do. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So you okay with this? Now, you may remember in 2024 when we had that, some people would say still, shocking victory over Kamala Harris by Mr. Trump, who's currently in the Oval Office. That night, there was a no-excuse absentee voting amendment that passed 58 to 42, 843,153 to 610,694. The amendment authorizing the General Assembly to go ahead and provide no-excuse absentee ballot voting. Now, it didn't say anything about mail-in voting, which is essentially what this is. If they had used the word mail-in voting, because I guess you could drop these off at a drop box, but most people, I guess, maybe I'm wrong here, are going to be using the wonderful U.S. mail service here. Now, previous to today, because this law kicked in today, the governor signing it today with a lot of ballyhoo and pomp and circumstance. Previous to today, if you wanted an absentee ballot in the state, you had to either be in active military service, you had to be away for the full day of voting during voting hours from the town or the city or the municipality where you usually vote. You had to be suffering an illness or physical disability. You had to be using or a member of a religion that precludes secular activity on election day. Or you had to be working in election and performing election-connected duties or campaign-connected duties at a place other than your local place where you usually vote, your local polling place. School, gym, firehouse, whatever, church, synagogue, wherever. Now, as of 2024, in eight states, every voter gets a mail-in ballot automatically. In 27 states, a mail-in or absentee ballot may be requested with no excuse required. So
This is now where Connecticut is falling. So we have fallen into the no-excuse absentee ballot request phase of this, which I guess is okay. But are you confident in this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And, you know, you read all the flowery language from the governor's office on this, and fine, you got to win here. Listen, to the victor go the spoils. But can we please, and you know this is one thing that just gets under my flabby skin here. This drives me nuts about, well, we have to make it easier to vote, and the easier, how difficult. Now, I guess this is a major step because a lot of people now are working schedules where, hey, the polls are open from 6 to 8. There are some people who can't get there between 6 and 8 on election day if they take an early commuting train or whatever, and they're working late at night. So I can see that. But it's not hard to vote. It's not. We've been voting in this country for what, how many, 248 or 250 years or whatever? If you start from 1776, but I guess we may not have had elections for a couple of years after that. Forgive me if I'm off by a few years on that. But this notion of, well, we have to make it easier to vote. No, you know what we need? It's plenty easy to vote. Even before Governor Lamont put pen to paper or quill to ink and parchment, I don't know how he did it, but it's not that hard. The overwhelming yes bill, 58%, supported authorizing the General Assembly to provide by law no excuse absentee voting. All right, if it makes it easier for somebody, God bless them. Do you trust it? And I know there are people who are going to hear me and say this, and they're probably going to bitch and moan if they're, you know, if they don't like when me or any of the other hosts mention this. But are the usual suspects in Bridgeport, are they licking their chops at this? Now, I'm sure there are other states that and we know that there are states with mail-in balloting. 7 or 8 states do their elections by mail. I'm not saying that's intrinsically a bad thing. But what about the situation here of what we've seen and what we're still going through with cases from 2019, with cases from 2023, and God knows what may happen in 2027. I hope there's nothing in 2027, but would it surprise you if there was? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Lots of people chiming in online on this one. You can, facebook.com/voiceofct. Do you approve? Do you like the fact that Governor Ned Lamont signs a bill allowing the use of no-excuse absentee ballots in Connecticut elections, or do you think this is a bad idea? Megan Portfolio joins us right now. There's a segue for you, the Hartford Portfolio. Megan, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing, Paul?
I'm going all right. Everything good with you? How's Bruno, first of all? How's the dog?
Oh, there's a little bit of thunder. So
oh, boy. And does he not like that?
Well, he feels like he has to save me, so he's getting all fired up and running around downstairs to protect me from that thunder.
Good.
He's very loyal.
Yeah, good boy. Hey, listen, I'm glad you wrote the piece you wrote this week, because I was wondering, in the whole shenanigans with John Larson and Luke Bronin and Jillian Gilchrist and everything, and Ruth Fortune, if she can get enough signatures there, what is up with the labor movement and now this sort of maybe changing of the guard here for Democrats, not only around the country, but here in Connecticut?
Yeah, this is very interesting. I don't normally weigh in on politics. I just don't have the stomach for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do follow organized labor very closely. And I found this very interesting post on Facebook. So right after the big upset with the former mayor of Hartford, Luke Bronin, beating John Larson, which I was like, holy cow, I never thought that would ever happen. One of the communications guys at AskMeCouncil4 goes to, I don't know why people post this stuff on social media, but he went on social media saying it was one of the proudest nights on earth having Luke Bronin win, which is very, which is kind of like this thing with these younger generations. They're so reliant on government and they just follow these politicians, like these politicians are going to cure all their ails. Well, it didn't stop there. One of the he actually just retired, but one of the very, very well-known lobbyists, Brian Anderson, for AFSCME, was like, "Hey, hey, wait a minute. Why are we celebrating John Larson losing? He has got, you know, 100% voting record with Labor. He's always supported us." And the like these younger generations, it's all about identity, you know, what group fit in and what label you have. And he's basically saying, like, oh, you know, throw the baby boomers out with the water is what he said, referring to all the older generations, geriatric. It was actually, you know, I was a little like, hey, let's show a little respect. I mean, I know John Larson, don't necessarily agree with John Larson's policies, but I mean, you know, you kind of have to respect the older generations. You know, they paved the way for us. They paved the way for, you know, this young guy to be doing what he's doing at AFSCME because of people like John Larson. So there was this whole back and forth with them. The older guy defending Larson and the younger guy calling him geriatric. Hey, I'm not even going to get Social Security. We need somebody young, you know, somebody with, you know, good social media presence. That's, you know, that's the way great policy is shaped through
social media. I mean, you know, and I don't know these guys from Adam who you mentioned there. I think I've seen their post once or twice, but you know, yes, some of the younger people. Now, I've been on this show, and I will not back away from saying the same thing you did. I can disagree with John Larson. I used to work in Hartford. I had him in the studio a couple of times. We talked about infrastructure and I-91 and I-84. But listen, the guy's got a constituency. And you know, Megan, it's weird. This is the exact, if we can use the word, old line John Larson, Joe Biden, Ed Rendell type of Democrat that used to get the labor vote without even trying. And now you have...
No, it's not going to be that easy anymore.
Yeah, and I think he's been a dog about Social Security, an attack dog on that, whatever. And I just wonder, and I'm not trying to sound like the old white pudgy guy from Wallingford, which I am. I'm not trying to sound that way, but what are these people thinking? I mean, Larson does have some seniority, and if certain things are going to get passed or not passed, they have to run by him. Do you think they just don't have the concept, for lack of a better term, of how things work?
I don't know. I I've seen it in New York City with the you know, this Mamdani winning his election. He was able to pull in these young union Democrat socialist activists. He was able to energize them. And these are like, this isn't your typical Democrat. This is like the free lunch bunch. These are the ones that want health care for. They want from cradle to grave to be taken care of by government. And if you can get enough of these young people energized and, you know, tell them, hey, you know, we're just going to tax the rich and then give you everything for free, they're able to energize the vote. And it's interesting in Connecticut because the unions have been so strong here, you know, and all the members have always been lockstep. Like the union says, you support this person, and they go out, they go door knocking. But now you have this generational divide. So it's going to be interesting to see, basically watch them, you know, eat their own at this point.
Yeah. And I remember when President Obama was in office and he would say something that I think is not being said enough today when, you know, Mr. Obama was asked, well, blah, 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 can you do this? And he would say, listen, I'm in the big office, but there's only so much I can do. And I think part of the frustration with younger voters, primarily on the Democratic side, both locally and in D.C., is, you know, Megan, they don't understand that, yeah, it can take a long time, but there's a process there. And sometimes that process is made to make change very hard. They might not like it, but that's the way it is.
Oh, I mean, the government's designed to be a bureaucracy because we don't want somebody coming in and, you know, hitting their hand on the desk, change this, do this now, because, I mean, there's implications to every policy that's created. Yeah. But these younger people, and again, this is not about politics right now. This is like I follow what they want for policy. And if these young folks are getting energized, you know, they're going to be splitting the union vote, and we don't know what we're going to end up having. And I mean, you see people. I just saw something on Capitol Report today, like a 4% surcharge when the guy running against
Josh Elliott.
Yeah. I couldn't think of his name for a second there. I mean, it was Josh. But I mean, he's already putting this stuff out there, and then he's telling, you know, they're telling these young people, the young followers, that, hey, you know, we're just going to tax the rich, and we're just going to give, we're going to pay for college, we're going to pay for this, we're going to pay for that. Well, it's never realistic.
And you know, Megan, finally on that, and I did about a half an hour on that. Listen, he's going right for the jugular here, because on social issues, you know, Lamont is right when he was on the other day with Dennis House and said, hey, just look at our record. I mean, on, you know, on stuff like ICE and Trump and abortion and SNAP, he is pretty progressive, but it's on that tax thing where, oddly enough, he caucuses kind of with the Republicans on this. So I'm not too surprised that immediately Josh Elliott is going dollars and cents here. And look, I don't think he'll win a primary, but I can actually imagine a huge upset, especially now. You probably think I'm nuts, but I can imagine that.
No, I mean, I've worked in, this is why I don't like politics, but I actually worked in it. I mean, it's about the hustle. Whoever's going to hustle the most, I mean, money is very, very important, probably one of the most important things when you're running for office. But if you have that hustle and you have that infrastructure, and which they do with the unions, and if you can sway all these young union guys to support you, I mean, there's going to be no easy race. I mean, every race is open for both Republicans and Democrats. It's just like on the hustle. I mean, you got to get out and do your doors and get your message out there. What policies are you going to implement when you get into office?
All right, check it out, folks. The name of the piece, Generational Fault Lines, Bronin's Upset Win Over Larson Exposes Tension Within Connecticut's Labor Movement. Megan Portfolio.
It'll be very fun to watch this.
Oh, my God. Get all the snacks. Get some adult beverages, and I'm there, right there. All right, Megan Portfolio.
I'll pop the popcorn, Paul.
Absolutely. I'll bring the pork rinds. Thanks, Meg. Appreciate it.
All right, bye.
Thanks. Let's step into a topic that a lot of people find difficult to talk about, but we have to. And again, there was a mass demonstration or mass demonstrations all across the UK and in Great Britain over the weekend in London. And a lot of people are saying, well, see, we told you so because of past policies, and the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Keir Starmer, seems, I'll be kind, inept on this. Mark Tapson joins us, T-A-P-S-O-N. He's on Substack.com, like a lot of our other guests here. Titles himself The Culture Warrior. He says, I write about the intersection of culture and politics. He's been on several national outlets. My old buddy Glenn Beck has had him on from time to time. Let's talk about what's going on in Great Britain. Mark, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you, Paul.
Mark, I saw the video over the weekend, and frankly, I think this is one of the most underreported stories that the news media is shirking its responsibility. The first one is Cuba. We all know why that. But now this, Mark, and what happened over the weekend, in case parts of my audience weren't tuned into that?
Yeah, there's a trial that's currently underway in England over this incident that happened late last December, and it involves a white British university student, an 18-year-old, who was the victim of a stabbing in this confrontation that we don't have a whole lot of details about because there were no witnesses. A little bit of it was apparently captured on the student's cell phone, but in any case, the upshot of it is that this student was on the way home from partying with friends. He encountered a Sikh stranger, you know, of the religion Sikhism.
Yeah.
And they had words. We don't know what that's all about exactly, but it ended with the university student being stabbed four times and the police arriving on the scene and arresting the student because even though he told them he had been stabbed and couldn't breathe, they said, apparently one of the cops told him, I don't think so, mate. And they arrested and handcuffed him as he was bleeding and accused him of racially abusing the Sikh stranger, the man who apparently had stabbed him with this this knife. In England, which has, you know, very serious knife crime problems, they have strict knife laws, but yeah. Sikhs are allowed a religious exemption to carry a sort of a ceremonial knife, which this person did have. But he also had, in addition to that, what turned out to be the murder weapon, his 8-inch knife. The student was stabbed 4 times, once in the lung, twice in the back of the legs, because apparently the student tried to flee and the guy pursued him aggressively, according to the prosecutor. But when the cops arrived, this Sikh claimed that he had been the one that was attacked and was racially abused. So the cops arrested and handcuffed this student, who proceeded to fall unconscious and die before the police could administer aid.
Yeah.
So this is and the thing is, what's so controversial about this, besides the incredible reversal or hypocrisy, of you know, coming and arresting the person who's bleeding, is that it highlights the two-tier justice system that is currently enraging Brits all across London and England, and in other parts of Europe, for that matter. This two-tier justice system, which prioritizes the rights and protections of the massive migrant community, especially Muslims, over the indigenous, in this case, British citizens. And so this is part of the reason that there was one of the protests that you alluded to in the beginning, the Unite the Kingdom protest, which drew so many people.
Yeah, and Mark, a few months ago, didn't we have another thing here where, and again, there are agitators on both sides, and there's this guy Tommy Robinson that doesn't really hold back. But, Mark, wasn't there outrage a few months ago when, my God, people across the country actually flew the Union Jack, and they flew the red and white flag of St. Paul? And you had some progressive people, you had Keir Starmer, you know, acting like it was World War III here. And I tell my listeners all the time, Mark, they can criticize the U.S. all they want, and that's good, and we survive on that. But, boy, never shirk away from the freedom of speech we have in this country, because I was watching that stuff a few weeks ago going, are you kidding me? I mean, that's just amazing.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of Americans may not realize that even though some European countries do have free speech, they don't have it to the extent that we do. And that results in things like British authorities knocking on the doors of people who are then accused of having tweeted something Islamophobic. So it's crazy. And it's really emblematic of a lot of what's going on across Europe and even elsewhere in the Western world. Not really here, although we may eventually face something like that. But in the UK, if you're a flag waving patriot in the UK, the Keir Starmer regime there will smear you as far right, as a bigot. It's really outrageous. They'll take down flags that have been put up by patriots, and the British people are rising up against this. They've had enough.
Yeah, and the guest is Mark Capson. I mean, Mark, is there any way to cool heads? Because I'm sure, Mark, as anything we always see, there are cooler heads on both sides. But to me, when any leadership of any country says, well, yeah, okay, but you have to understand, and a large amount of the population there is going to say, no, screw that. We don't have to understand. You're diluting our culture. You're diluting our pride in being Brits. I mean, is this only going to get worse before it gets better?
Yes, I think it will. I've been saying for years and years that it's going to get worse, that it's going to result in literal violence in the streets, because you have these elites in power all throughout most of Europe, but you can especially see it happening in the UK. You have these globalist elites who are hell-bent on dissolving national identities, dissolving national sovereignty, dissolving even the Christian faith of a continent that was once called Christendom. These globalist elites are hell-bent on doing this. They're not going to relinquish power. They simply double down anytime the British citizens express their outrage. They just double down on it. And so I think I don't see a peaceful solution to this in the I think in the short run, we're going to see increasing violence from a populace that has decided it's had enough, and has no legal or social recourse except violence.
Not good. Our guest, Mark Tapson, by the way, the Shulman Fellow on Popular Culture for the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Folks, look for his books. And by the way, once again, Mark is on Substack.com. Go to Mark Tapson, T-A-P-S-O-N, calls himself the Culture Warrior. Mark, thank you. Hopefully the situation gets better over there in the great UK, but we cross our fingers. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate Absolutely. The time today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Appreciate it. Yeah.